Welcome to the Ivy Tech Podcast, powered by the MBA Tech Club here at the Ivy School of Business. I'm Sam Sim, MBA class of 2021. Today, we're talking about program management and business development. These are two very different roles, but are both often occupied by MBAs. Our guest is Erin Johnson. She's an MBA 2017 alumni and a senior business development manager at Top Hat, an education technology startup based in Toronto. Prior to that, Erin was a senior program manager at Amazon. You'll hear her talk about what it's like to transition from the energy sector into tech and why she believes both program management and business development are great roles for MBA grads. All right, let's get started. Hey, Erin, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Sam. Thanks for having me.
And where do we find you today?
I am calling in from Calgary.
Well, before we get started talking about what you're up to now, I always like to start these interviews by asking the guests what they were up to prior to going back to school. So can you talk to us about what you were doing before you went back to Ivy?
Yeah, absolutely. So my education was in business, accounting specifically. And prior to the MBA, I had worked for about 5 years at a pipeline company here in Calgary in the finance department. Started in accounts payable. I worked a couple other roles in accounting, risk, and then ultimately in the treasury department. And that was really the only company that I had worked at after my undergrad degree. So all of my experience was really specific to the oil and gas industry, specific to Calgary, and specific to finance.
What influenced you to go back and do your MBA? It sounds like you were doing really well at Alliance. You were working in accounting and finance, and you were moving up in the organization. So what ultimately led you to go back to school?
Yeah, I really enjoyed my time at Alliance. And like you said, I got the good fortune of being able to be promoted through a couple of different roles. I learned a lot there. But, you know, I had taken a break close to the end of that 5 years. I took some time off and went traveling with my now husband. And it really just, I took a couple months, just rethought my career. And I actually met up with, when we went through England, I met up with my cousin who was doing his MBA at Oxford at the time. And it really kind of made me rethink everything. And I think what it made me face is that I really wasn't passionate about the energy sector, even though I really loved my role. I had a great boss. I thought it was a fantastic company. And as the roles became more senior and I had more impact on the company, I realized I really wasn't passionate enough about what we were doing there. So there were aspects that I loved about it, but that going traveling, kind of taking a step back, really made me rethink it. You know, I always loved school. So actually, I was pretty excited about the thought of going back to school and going back into business.
Let's move forward and talk about once you were at Ivy, specifically the recruiting process. I'm curious what the discovery process was like for you when you were thinking about what you wanted to do after graduation. Did you always know that you wanted to pursue a role in a tech company after graduating?
Yeah, good question. I absolutely had no idea I was going to pursue technology. You know, I always assumed wrongly, which I now know, that you have to be really tech savvy to go into tech, to be successful in tech. And I'm not really that tech savvy. My husband works in software development and that's definitely his thing. And so it's a daily reminder that I'm not super up on technology. I thought that would matter, but I've since learned you could be very successful at a tech company without being a really techie person. So no, I had no idea that that's the space that I was going to go into. And actually, I wasn't certain what I wanted to go into. A lot of my classmates, and I don't know if you're seeing the same thing, Sam, but a lot of my classmates were so confident coming in. I want to go into consulting or I want to go into banking. They knew sometimes even down to the firm, down to the role. But I wasn't sure about the tech. I felt pretty strongly that consulting or banking wasn't for me. Which actually can make you feel like a bit of an outsider at Ivy, but I kind of explored a lot of other industries and I just went in with a really open mind.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think a lot of people can relate to what you just described, this whole idea that you go back to pursue your MBA and you want to do consulting afterwards or whatever it is that you're targeting, and you end up realizing through the MBA process that it isn't the right fit for you. And then you have to decide what is it that you're going to pursue after graduating. So I'm curious, how did you know that tech was the right industry and the right fit for you after graduating?
I'm grateful to myself for keeping an open mind when I was at Ivy, because I wouldn't have said, oh, you know, Amazon was a target firm. I wouldn't have said that tech was where I was going to go. But what I did was I had an open mind. I feel like I got a lot out of my career management appointments, and I really listened to what they had to say, and I really worked the Ivy network. I just had a lot of conversations with people. Anytime an industry even kind of sounded remotely interesting to me, I would find an alum who was willing to have a chat and just get their experience. And I'd say if you're going into the program not knowing, or even if you're not even sure of what you want to do, you have to do yourself the favor of putting the work in to explore the other opportunities. Because I also know people that were in my year that they were sure of their, let's say they were sure of consulting and they were even sure of their target firm. And then less than a year after we graduated, they switched jobs. So I think it's such a unique opportunity that in your career, you kind of get to stop, press pause, take a step back and go, okay, what do I really want to do? That you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't kind of explore everything.
If you had to give advice to students who were looking to pivot into the tech industry, how would you advise they structure their exploration process to understand which tech company is the right fit for them?
Yeah, I guess the big thing that I would share is I almost didn't apply to the Amazon role because I was so sure I wouldn't get hired, because I was coming from the energy sector in Calgary with absolutely no tech experience, no like retail or e-tail experience, like basically anything that might initially seem relevant to Amazon. Also, it's, you know, one of the largest, most successful companies in the world, has this amazing reputation that they only hire the best. I had almost just written off what was the point of applying. So I guess the biggest insight that I would share is you're at this really interesting crossroads and nothing is out of your reach. And that may sound a little hokey, but the point is what I learned about Amazon is that they're not looking for someone that has the perfect experience that lines up with their roles or someone that's done what they do there before. They look for people who are a certain type of person who's a problem solver, they're resourceful, they're bright. And so it doesn't matter if your experience lines up. So I think that's my insights about moving to tech. That's also my insights about pivoting an industry. I was so close to not applying and I'm so glad that I did. And then to your point on kind of whether to go for a startup or maybe a larger company, I feel like when you're coming out of your MBA, you only do that once in your life. You're only exiting your MBA once. And so that's kind of the time to shoot for the stars. I feel like if you're living and working in Toronto, there's going to be opportunities to kind of join an interesting startup. And, you know, it's kind of just-in-time recruiting, so you can kind of keep an eye on roles that interest you. But I feel like I had one shot to join Amazon, because had I applied for Amazon, you know, straight out of Alliance, the pipeline company that I was working at, I don't think I would have even got a call. So being able to kind of shoot for those huge companies, like take that opportunity, you may as well apply. You never know what's going to happen.
Since you mentioned your time at Amazon, I'd love to move forward and talk more about that. Can you tell us more about your experience as a senior program manager there?
Yeah, so it really did. It's kind of a broad job title. And I saw them throughout a ton of different functions and departments at Amazon. But what it means when you have the title of senior program manager is that basically you get to be the CEO of your own kind of project that you take on. Now, the role that I had was in an area called PLS, which was product lifecycle support. And so we were supporting customers who didn't necessarily want to return, but they had something wrong with something that they purchased on Amazon. And it's this really amazing function at Amazon, really small, but actually they're able to prevent ton of returns, keep customers really happy and keep products in their hands, which is what we wanted. But the back to the title, it's the senior program manager is you get to just own everything. So I had like my own P&L. I had my own budgeting. I had my own planning, had my own metrics to hit. I would present on the results, but really like you just get to own. So when they say program manager, like you really do manage a program and you own kind of tip to tail. Which is something actually I really loved about Amazon. There's so much autonomy, even at such a massive company.
It sounds like the role entails a lot of relationship management, project management, being able to really operationalize a project from end to end.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was really interesting because I was managing people both. So I was in Seattle at the time, both in the US, but also internationally. So we had basically employees at call centers working for us that was, you know, helping keeping the products in customers' hands. And that kind of came with its own unique challenges. So I'd say there were so many aspects of that role. And you're rightly touching on when you say, Sam, that it's relationship management, because it was with employees, it was with partner companies. And then, of course, it was with the departments that were under the same kind of retail umbrella. So that kind of permeated the role throughout.
I'm curious what the interviewing process would be like for that role at Amazon. I've heard a lot about the Amazon interviewing process and how it can be unique in comparison to other technology companies. Can you talk about how that experience was?
Yeah, it's certain. Yeah, unique is a good word. Intense is another word that's been used to describe it. It gave me confidence going in that people are really well vetted because it was a lot. But basically, and I know this has changed a little bit since I was interviewing, so I can only speak to what I went through. But after I applied for the role, I was contacted and said they want to kind of put you through a little, it's almost like a little activity, a little case that you run through online. So it gave me kind of an idea of what it would be like to work at Amazon, because you get into this portal and you're kind of pretending to be an Amazon employee, and you'll get an instant message that will pop up and you'll get emails that are coming in. I really loved it, actually. It would say things like, hey, Aaron, can you take a look at these graphs of inventory for shoes? What do you think could be going wrong here? We seem to be losing money. And then you kind of sift through and you do a little bit of problem solving. And then you answer questions. I thought it was a really great way to kind of introduce me to Amazon. And then after I finished that, it was multiple choice questions about your behavior, what you do in certain situations, how you react. And then there were two short essay questions, which I then went on to learn, becoming an employee of Amazon, that writing is a really important skill there. And so I think they want to test that as well. That was kind of phase one. I was lucky enough to get an interview after that. And then the interview process was two more rounds of interviews. But in a round, I spoke to four people. So you speak to four people. Chances are when they do the MBA hiring, they don't always know where they're going to place you. So they're just kind of doing a generic hire. So chances are the four people that you speak to, you'll never work with. It's not going to be your manager. Like, it's just, they call them bar raisers at Amazon. They interview people, and the term bar raiser, just making sure that kind of you meet the bar of an Amazon employee. And it was basically all behavioral. There was a very light case question, but it wasn't how we think of case questions at Ivy, where, you know, you have pen and paper and you're figuring out. It was more just, hey, in this situation, what would you do? So it was a lot of behavioral questions, typically all kind of asking about Amazon's leadership principles.
It's interesting that you mentioned the writing portion, because I chatted with another alum who's at Amazon right now, and he mentioned the writing piece as well. He said that at Amazon, they don't really use presentation decks. It's mostly two pagers where you would write your thoughts on a product or some sort of project, and people spend the first few minutes of the meeting reading it.
Yeah, exactly. That it was so interesting getting to Amazon. I had never heard of anything like that before. Yeah, you said two pagers. Sometimes it's as many as six pages. And yeah, you take the first 10 minutes or so of a meeting and everyone makes sure they've read it. And then what I like about it over a PowerPoint is that all the details are in that document, whereas a PowerPoint can kind of just touch on the highlights or miss maybe some of the numbers. Yeah, it was really unique. And actually, I've taken it with me. That's not to say I never use a PowerPoint, but there are instances where I think, okay, no, the details are important here. I'm just going to bring a document to the meeting or send out a document beforehand.
I want to talk about the general transition from the finance accounting role in the energy sector into a company like Amazon. You've alluded to it a little bit in terms of the differences, but I'd love to understand what that initial change was like for you. Like, what were the major differences that you noticed immediately when you changed industries and roles?
Yeah, I think I'm an example of really doing kind of the polar opposite, because the energy sector is pretty, not stable maybe in that way, but the work is stable. The processes are really set. Some of the major changes was things were done pretty slowly. And then at Amazon, things move so fast. Amazon is really pro risk-taking, which is not at all the case, at least at the company that I was working for. Risk is such an important component. Government is involved. Everything at Amazon was just try it. We talked about the notion of a two-way door. And they used to say at Amazon, if it's a two-way door, meaning if you make a mistake, can you back up? Can you reverse your decision and everything will be fine? Could we try a promotion? And if it really doesn't work or it doesn't sell, okay, we'll just cancel the promotion. If it's a two-way door, go for it. And then, of course, there are scenarios where it's a one-way door. That's where you have to be careful. But Amazon really pushed the idea of if it's a two-way door, just go for it. Kind of this fail fast mentality. There was so much autonomy, as I mentioned, at Amazon. It's almost like every employee is CEO in their own little way of their own job. Whereas at the company that I was at prior, like the processes were so set, change was really slow. I think there was a sense of, and I'd say a lot of this is the same with my current job as well. There's a lot of chaos in a positive way. Like things aren't, I feel like there's not a lot of time wasted on red tape or maybe like perfecting a process where it's like, well, can we just move forward? And I think teams are a little bit smaller at Amazon. I felt like some of the teams have gotten quite large at the company that I was at. And one key thing I want to point out is at Amazon, people are really rewarded, promoted, moved forward based on merit. Whereas in the oil and gas industry in Calgary, I think there's a lot of, not that it's not based on merit, but there's a lot of, oh, well, he's been here for a long time. Or, oh, after 5 years at the company, you get moved to this pay scale or whatever. Whereas at Amazon, it's like, well, are you performing? Okay, then you're going to get rewarded. Those are kind of some of the major differences.
Can you talk about how you dealt with that mindset shift moving from a traditional industry, oil and gas, energy sector, over to this fast-moving technology company? How did you shift your mindset to be open to this change in culture and change of working?
Yeah, it definitely takes some getting used to. Yeah, you kind of have to, you just have to try, because as soon as you try something and it doesn't work and you find out it's not such a big deal, or actually sometimes you're kind of rewarded for taking that risk, even though it didn't work out, you gain the confidence slowly. So it's kind of like, my suggestion would be dip your toe in the pool of risk taking or trying something new, because it will kind of snowball and you'll gain that confidence. The other advice that I would give, because it is a pretty major mind shift, is to take advantage of the employees that are already there that are willing to talk to you. And Amazon has a couple pretty good kind of buddy programs where you can connect with other employees that are outside of your department, which is, I thought, was a good idea, because you can kind of ask all your stupid questions and not worry about it getting back to your boss. But I took advantage of that. I had lunches or coffees out, and you know, just getting to know everyone and hearing kind of anecdotes and stories. You really, instead of just being told that that's the way it is, you actually see that, okay, yes, that's the way it is. And I think a combination of that and just trying it out, you eventually just become confident that, hey, I can do this. And actually moving fast is pretty fun, and experimenting is fun. And I think it depends on one's personality, but I loved the chaos or the fail fast, things moving really quickly. And it was a very welcome change after working at such a stable, kind of like slow, very like process driven company. I liked the shakeup. So I think like embrace that change as well.
I do want to ask, because you had mentioned the opportunities upwards at Amazon, if you think about your peers who were in the program manager role, what types of roles did they move forward or get promoted into?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's kind of a complicated answer because it's such a massive company. So there's, and this role kind of permeates the company as far as I know. But what I found is that the people who succeeded and the people I stayed in touch with that have maybe moved up at Amazon actually often made, I guess the best way to phrase it would be they made a lateral move. There's levels at Amazon, and it's very unlikely that you would change your team and change your level at the same time. And it's hard to kind of just move straight up at Amazon because there are so many employees and so many departments. Like it's such a massive company that people succeeded a lot of time. I saw someone move into a vendor manager role, which would be, or like a senior vendor manager, which would be a similar level, I guess, and then move up to a manager of vendor managers. Like you kind of move into the manager role where the program managers fall under you would be like the next step up. But it's not always crystal clear when you look at the Amazon org chart because there's so many roles. But what Amazon's really good at is everyone kind of has their own performance plan. So you actually say, okay, this is the next job I want. And it's not always on the same team. It's not always the same department. But you kind of identify things you're interested in. And then you and your boss work together to say, okay, well, that job needs these 5 skills. You have 3. So here are the 2 you need to develop.
Yeah. One of the things that I hear consistently about Amazon is that they're great for being open to people trying different things. And so let's say you start as a program manager, if you are interacting a lot with another org within Amazon and you want to try out a different function, a lot of people who work there have told me that the company is very supportive of something like that. So it sounds like there is a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd say what I would even encourage someone that's working at Amazon, like, don't box yourself into thinking that you need to be so linear, like you're going to move to your boss's job, because there's so many other routes to explore at Amazon. And like you said, the company as a whole is really encouraging about experimentation, including with your own career, which just makes it so exciting. And because it's such a huge company with so many different functions, you can really kind of experiment with your career so many different ways without even leaving the company.
I want to talk about what you're doing now. So you're a senior business development manager at Top Hat, which is an education technology startup in Toronto. I'd love to understand what your role is within the organization. What does the business development team do at a startup like Top Hat?
Yeah, good question. When I joined Top Hat, which I think you can hear, I speak really positively about my experience at Amazon, which it certainly was, but I felt like I had kind of a once in a career chance to join Top Hat because the business development team was just being built. So my boss, my then boss who hired me, him and I started the team. There was no business development team prior to that. And so the business development team at Top Hat, because we were brand new, it was very exploratory. And the term business development, I've learned since joining it, I didn't know this before, it has so many different definitions at different companies. So I encourage anyone who's interested in business development as a whole, make sure you understand a role before applying, because it can mean like the lowest or the most junior sales role could be like a business development representative. Whereas at other companies, business development could mean anything from M&A to strategy to partnership. So I think the term is really broad. So I'll speak about my experience, but just on that note, like I would encourage anyone that's interested in business development to like research exactly what the role entails. At Top Hat, because we were starting the team, it wasn't really strictly defined. It was very loose, and we were just encouraged to go explore new streams of revenue. And I think that's a good way that does kind of capture business development as a whole, is exploring revenue streams and being proactive about it. And so what we do at Top Hat, the focus has changed from day to day, but what we do is always focused on something new that the company isn't doing today that we could bring in or partner on that will bring us not just more revenue, but a new source of revenue. And like I said, that focus has shifted multiple times on what exactly that might be.
Yeah, I like that you brought up the broadness of the business development role definition, because I do find the same thing. Sometimes you're looking at a business development role and it could be managing a bunch of junior outbound sales representatives, or the same role at a different company can mean that, like you said, you're doing more corp dev work or M&A strategic partnership type work. Mm-hmm. So it is so broad, and I haven't really figured out why that is. But I really do like your advice about asking and confirming with the company what that definition means specifically for the organization.
Yeah, and I think you have it pretty right that it tends to fall into the two buckets of sort of corp dev and then like the junior sales or like the outbound sales. Basically, this seems to be kind of like the two broad categories, but there is some middle ground too. So research is important.
It's interesting you mentioned that you joined Top Hat as they were just developing the BD team there. So you were, if I'm correct, it was you and one other person, and you really built out the team. And I'm curious, if you were to think about whether that opportunity became available to you while you were at Ivy and you were thinking, should I do this right after my graduation? Do you think that joining a company with the opportunity to build something out like that is something that MBAs should consider doing right after graduation?
Yeah, I'll answer that question in two ways. That's a really good question, Sam. Because on the one side, I don't think I would have been ready for the role without Amazon. And I'm not saying that's the case for everyone, but I was new to tech. I was new to the speed. I was new kind of to everything. And I was going to one of the most renowned, you know, Amazon still says they treat themselves like a startup. They treat every day like day one. And so I got that kind of fail fast, chaotic, quick moving. I kind of got that mentality first before going into the BD role. So in that way, I was really glad that I went this roundabout way, because I feel like I got a bit of a handle on tech. I got a bit of a handle on the startup mentality, even though obviously Amazon's not a startup anymore. They still kind of carry that mentality well. So in that way, like, that's just really personal. I'm glad that I got the experience at Amazon. But specific to your question, I actually, and I've said this to some of my alum who have asked about joining my team or a similar team in another company, I actually think BD is kind of the perfect culmination for an MBA student or for someone coming out of an MBA, because it's so broad, because it's not something that currently exists. You just have to go in with an open mind. You have to go in knowing something about business, knowing something about how other businesses operate, knowing what motivates a business. And actually, I found that the case method specifically was such good preparation for biz dev, because it's almost like every day is kind of a case study at work. It's okay, you know, Erin's sitting in her desk, you know, all the cases start sitting at her desk having her coffee, and this is her conundrum. But it's kind of that you're faced with a business, and maybe another business has just called me and said, hey, can we work together? And then it's kind of like I have a case study in front of me, and there is no clear answer, where there might be, you know, in finance, there might be a right and wrong number. In BD, it's just kind of this same case mentality where it's like, okay, here I am. Here's where the business is at today. We want to succeed. Here are all the factors. Now, like, what can I do with that?
So you mentioned that your mandate as a team was to go out and explore new revenue streams for Top Hat. I'm curious, what does that mean on a typical day or week? Like, what would be some of the things that you and your team would be doing to assess these new types of opportunities?
Yeah. So one of the things I like about the role is that the days really don't look the same, or sometimes they can look the same for a month, but it won't be the same after that. The BD team's goals, priorities shift with the company's priorities. So I feel really lucky to be on the team. We're in such close contact with the CEO. It's important for us to have a pulse on what is troubling him the most, what he's most excited about, what his biggest focus is for the company, because really that's where the BD resources go. So a typical day, I would say, there's really a balance between internal and external communication. And I think relationship management and communication is at the heart of everything I do, but it'll be jumping from, you know, an internal meeting with execs maybe who are saying, hey, we really need to focus right now on publishing and getting new content, new textbooks for our professors. And so, you know, we're taking then what the executives say, and then I may pivot and be on a phone call with a publisher in the afternoon and saying, hey, what's really important to you guys right now? Do you have a digital solution? Are you interested in having your books, you know, come to life in an interactive way? There's a bit of a sales pitch there as well, if we're reaching out to companies. And then we're balancing kind of the outbound reaching out with inbound. So we have a ton of companies, especially tech companies in the education space, that are reaching out to us saying, hey, we need to work together. You know, let's say we have this software, we think you guys would love it, or we have a customer base, help us, you know, deliver to them. So it's a balance between I'm having internal meetings and then external, both inbound and outbound. And then, of course, there's always kind of a project management component. So let's say we have a new partner that we're testing a partnership out with. So I'm checking, hey, are we meeting our milestones with them? Is this the ROI we thought we'd have? How is the partner relationship going? What's troubling them? What can we be doing to make this a success? So it's kind of a balance of, yeah, internal, external, project management. And then I'd say one of my favorite parts of the role and a really important component is getting the rest of the company excited about what we're doing, because we're always doing something new. So probably all the other employees aren't aware of what we're doing, especially if it's in an experimentation phase or we're just trying to decide, do we want to go this way with it? So one of my favorite parts of the role is standing up at our all hands and saying, hey, did everyone know we're working on this? And you know what, if anyone's interested, we have anyone wants to volunteer, we want to talk to a couple customers. Does anyone have customers that want to put us in touch with? So kind of also being the, you know, the cheerleader for the BD team as well, and getting the rest of the company excited about what we're working on.
It sounds like there's a lot there, and it definitely doesn't sound like, it sounds like no 2 days are alike. I'm curious, what does success mean for someone on your team then? Do they have set goals with quotas, or do they have some other sort of measurement? Because it sounds like you're responsible for so much, and a lot of it is a lot of exploration of new potential opportunities. How is success defined for a BD manager at Top Hat?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's one I think we're still working on, because like I said, my boss was employee number one on the biz dev team, and I was employee number two. And we were tasked with, you know, presenting what we thought, let's say, like what our bonus should be based on, or what our targets, what our milestones are going to be. It's really tough because we're constantly pivoting. Even, you know, with COVID, all of a sudden we had a surge of professors that had never taught virtually before that needed solutions for that. And that hadn't always been our number one focus. But actually, one thing I love about Top Hat is we pivot really quickly. So we can't, I mean, we have set goals in the past, but sometimes we've thrown them out. Sometimes we've changed them. Sometimes we've just had to kind of make a judge, or our CRO, like our exec, had to make a judgment call on like what the bonus is going to be. Because let's say we're focusing on something like, okay, we want to work with publishers, we want publisher partnerships, you know, that's what our goals are going to be based, or that's what our, you know, bonuses, our comp is going to be based on. And then all of a sudden COVID hits and it's like, okay, well now today our priority is now delivering the best virtual experience we can. We have to pivot really quickly. And, you know, I think if you have the right team, they're not going to say, well, wait, before I pivot, like, am I going to hit my target? Am I going to get my bonus? If you have the right team, they're going to say, like, yeah, let's do it. Let's make this a success. We're excited about it. And you kind of worry about that later. To answer your question, like, they're very loosely defined and they change often. But I trust my boss. I trust our executive. And we have conversations often. And so we kind of make those changes in the moment as they need to be changed, because they get outdated quickly if that's not the case.
I think you're describing a similar experience at a lot of startups. And so it's a good point to bring up, because I think when people are thinking about whether to join a startup, that is one of the things that they likely will have to be comfortable with. Having come from an early stage startup, I can share a lot of the same experience that you just described. And it is quite jarring in the beginning when you're changing so quickly like that, learning to adapt to it definitely helps.
Yeah. And you're right. It's jarring. And I think also, you know, when I think back to myself, if I was coming straight out of undergrad, I feel like, at least for me, my mentality was like, oh, I want to please my boss. And so I was so worried about those measures and those metrics that it was, well, this is what my performance is based on, so I'm going to worry about those things. Whereas I think at this point in my career and after doing my MBA, it's a good thing to take a step back and not actually focus on that, because I actually find if you like your job and you focus on the work and you do a good job, like, you will be compensated fairly and, you know, probably more than you wanted if you're excited about what the company's doing and you're more focused on that. So of course, compensation's important and you want to feel like you're being fairly rewarded and you want to feel like your achievements are properly compensated. But I think if you, at least for myself, when I shifted the mentality to, hey, I'm really excited about what this company's doing, I'm going to do whatever I can to make this company succeed, that's when you really succeed. And you don't need to worry about, oh, did I hit my target? Because you'll be fairly compensated, because when you're happy, you're succeeding, at least for me.
Let's talk about the recruiting process. When you're hiring someone on the BD team at Top Hat, what does that experience look like? And what are you looking for in a potential hire?
Yeah, so I think you've kind of gotten the gist that, like, it's pretty loosely defined. It can be pretty broad. So I think actually, and like I said, I think BD is a good place for an MBA to go, because I kind of feel like an MBA is well-rounded and maybe like less focused on being an expert in one field, but more being a sort of a general business expert. So I'd say specifically for our team, like, that's what we're looking for. We're looking for people who are resourceful problem solvers that can move quickly and take risks, and sort of these more broad terms than for me to specifically say, like, oh, I want someone with Six Sigma, I want someone who's really good at finance or whatever. When we were hiring for the team, actually, the recruiters met with us and they said, okay, do you want someone with finance experience? Do you want someone that's come from M&A? Because we were exploring some M&A. And we actually said, we don't care what their experience is. We just want the right candidate. And that's kind of what I talked about with the Amazon hiring, is that they're not looking for someone whose experience is matched. They're looking for those, just like sort of the person that's like really resourceful, that's going to get the job done no matter what. And even if they've never done anything like that before. So that's kind of specifically what that's actually not very specific. That's broadly what we're looking for on the team. And then I think people who don't get too stressed out, because we do pivot a lot and things don't work and then we have to change. And me and my boss, I felt like he had such a great sense of humor, and I feel like I do too. And we could joke about things when they didn't go well. And of course we took our jobs really seriously, but to be kind of laid back with failure is important too. So that's kind of what we're looking for on the team. And then recruiting process. So there's no formal MBA program, or everyone kind of goes through the same process no matter what the role is at Top Hat. And it's, you know, you're screened by a recruiter, typically on the phone. Then you'd meet with the hiring manager at some point in the hiring process. You would do kind of a sample of your work. Now that's going to change. So if you're going to be a software developer, you may walk through, you know, a piece of code or how you might do something. Whereas a salesperson is probably going to give a Top Hat pitch. Mine was more, hey, what opportunities would you explore and how would you explore them? So that was a little more broad, but, you know, there's some kind of sample work. Then you give that presentation to your hiring manager and maybe also your executive as well. And then we do something at Top Hat called the Top Grade Interview. You can look it up. I had never heard of it. It's used at some companies, but it's really interesting because it's a type of interview actually where you get asked all the way back to, mine went as far back as high school. And basically it's a way to kind of like look for trends with someone and looking for, hey, do they take accountability? Are they a hard worker? That sort of thing. So everyone goes through a Top Grade at Top Hat as well. And then for the more senior roles, my role included, the CEO may kind of do a last pass. That's kind of getting fewer and far between and just more with kind of like the really senior roles at this point. So actually there's quite a few touch points, but like I said, with Amazon, it gave me actually the confidence that the people at Top Hat are being like pretty well vetted.
My follow-up question was going to be about how to position yourself for a BD role at a company like Top Hat if you've never worked in BD before? But you've kind of already answered that question. It sounds like if someone is interested, they should make sure they position themselves as someone who is comfortable with ambiguity, a person who's ready to roll up their sleeves and figure out a solution to a challenging problem, and then someone who's just a good relationship manager, because it sounds like a lot of the work on the BD team is about finding opportunities with external partners.
Yeah, I think that you've got it exactly right. The ambiguity thing is big. Yeah, and I think risk-taking is kind of the other part, independent. But also, I like, and my advice, and this wouldn't just be for Top Hat, this would be for any BD role, is BD is loosely defined, and you don't always need BD experience to get hired in a BD role, but you have to know how your old skills will transfer. And I think that's really the case in any job you apply for. Aside from my time at Amazon, I had only had a finance background, but when I went into my interview at Top Hat, I kind of spent some time saying, hey, you're a one team right now with no finance experience. And no, we're not a finance team, but here's what I can bring. I can help with, you know, doing some of our ROI. I can help with budgeting. I can help with setting up how we're going to launch some of these things. Like from a financial perspective, I can be the conduit between us and the finance team. Like just taking what you have and saying it's not irrelevant. It's very relevant. And here's how. And it may not seem apparent when you're looking at a resume, but, you know, to be able to have that come to life and say, like, here's the unique thing I'm going to bring to the team. Because BD is so general, broad, there's a lot of ambiguity, as you said, it's really cool to see people with a different background come in and say, like, hey, here's the spin actually I'm going to put on the team.
So I want to move forward from the hiring process at Top Hat and hiring for BD. And I'm curious whether you found specific aspects of the MBA program beneficial to your BD role.
Yeah, I did. And I think, you know, where someone who maybe goes into a banking role could say, oh, the accounting class was really helpful. It's not as clear cut for BD, but I learned a few things that really helped also at my time at Amazon. One of those was ask a lot of questions, figure out ways to kind of pull all the information that you need, and even just to speak up. You know, the participation thing at Ivy can seem a little bit daunting, but I'm sure you've gone through the same thing, Sam, where once you start doing it, you just kind of forget about it. You take the pressure off yourself. And then all of a sudden you're speaking in every class. And it really just, I mean, I'm not a shy person anyway, but I think it just taught me to just always speak up if I have something to say, or if I have a question, just to ask it. And I think the case method specifically just exposed me to so many different business examples that I had never thought about or maybe even cared about. But you just read so many cases that you learn, oh, hey, actually some businesses run like this, and some use this model, and some prioritize upline, and some prioritize margins, that you just think differently about business in general. And that's so helpful in BD, because you have a company that approaches you, you have to kind of take a quick pass at their website or whatever and get a feel for what they do. And it's almost like reading a case. It's almost like reading a case. You're taking a quick look at a company, getting a quick feel for their priorities, what they care about, and then trying to determine if there's a fit. Okay, do we want to work with this company? Is there a partnership there? So I think the case method was huge. And one thing I really liked about the profs at Ivy was, if I gave a one-word answer, or even if I gave a long-winded answer, they always pushed back. They always said, well, what about this? Or why? Or, you know, they'll always push you. So it always taught me to be sort of three steps ahead, have the next three answers to the questions I was probably going to get. And I just find myself doing it at work now. It's just a habit where I'm ready to answer. You anticipate the questions, I guess is what I'm saying. And I have them sort of pre-answered. I think that's so good to have in the workplace. It's a really strong asset. And then it really just gave me information about what jobs are out there, because, you know, you spend so much time with career management, but also you just spend so much time with the other people in your MBA class who say, hey, I came from this background. And it might make you think about a job opportunity or a career or an industry that you've never thought of. And kind of related to that, then sort of my last point on what I got out of the MBA was a really strong network. And I think it's kind of repeated to you over and over when you're a student at Ivy, but it's true. And I think both I have really good friends that I met at Ivy, but then also I have, you know, experts in different industries. And And even as Top Hat kind of started to dabble in M&A a bit, I had a ton of like investment banker friends that I could call up and say like, hey, how does this work? And how do you price that? And just like, it's really helped me in my job to have kind of experts in all different industries. So the network as well. So those are kind of the major things. And also I learned, you know, of course, technical skills or specific things that I've pulled from, but I'd say even more than that, it's the more broad things like reading a lot of cases and having a good network.
Earlier, we talked about joining a startup or joining a big technology company. I'm also curious what it's like to be at an education technology company, especially because there's so many different types of startups in Toronto or in Canada. I wonder, what is it like to work at a company that's trying to transform the education space?
It's a good question and it's an important question, I think, because while I loved Amazon and I learned a lot, I think I felt the same thing that I felt back at the pipeline company I worked at, which is, am I really passionate about the mission or you know, what we stand behind? The biggest shift for me moving from Amazon to Top Hat, there are two things. One is I found I've been able to make such a large impact at Top Hat because the company is in such early stages and because it's smaller. Amazon, I had, like I said, you get to kind of be your own CEO. I actually did have opportunities to make an impact, which is cool at such a big company, but not in the way, like I'm not having meetings with Jeff Bezos, obviously, you know, being at Amazon, but I'm having meetings with my CEO at Top Hat and he's amazing and I'm inspired by him and I feel connected to our mission as a company. So that's kind of an aside about why I find being at Top Hat more rewarding because I'm just closer to everything. I can have more of an impact. Secondly, and like more to your question, what you're asking about ed tech specifically, I've now found a company, like I said, at Amazon and at Alliance, I never felt really passionate. I've now found a company where I really, truly care about what we're doing. And when I see that we've affected graduation rates, we've increased graduation rates, we've decreased dropout rates, we can lower the costs of course content, course materials for students in a time when student debt is so out of control. Like those are things I actually care about. I feel good about, especially coming right out of the MBA. You're reminded that, oh yeah, textbooks are $200 and I'm probably never going to read it. You know, that's a problem we're addressing at Top Hat. So it's actually a problem that's really relevant to me, but I really care about what we're doing. So I, you know, there's so many space, there's so many cool startups, especially like I think Toronto, there's so much exciting stuff happening there. If you can just find the company where you're excited about what they're doing and you feel passionate about it and you like talking about it, that's a pretty good sign that you're going to like your work and you're probably going to succeed because you like your work. Like I love working hard for that company because I'm excited about what's happening there.
Well, before we go, Erin, I just wanted to say thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing your journey and your insights along the way. And I'd love to leave you the opportunity to provide any parting advice or any final thought before we go.
Yeah, so I think I said this, but you don't need to be a techie to be successful in tech. That's one thing I wish someone had told me earlier. But the big thing, and I have touched on this, that I would sort of impart is now's the time to pivot. You know, not a lot of people get this opportunity where, you know, midway through your career, you can actually stop, take a step back, reassess, and go for something brand new. So take that risk now. You know, I came from finance. I knew I could go back to finance one day if I wanted to, if I felt like, okay, tech isn't for me or BD isn't for me or whatever. Like it's there. So your old career is there. You can always go back to it. So seize the day. Today's the day to do it. Take the risk, make the pivot, you know, apply for the Amazon job, even if you don't think you're qualified at all, because now's the time to do it and really good things could come out of it.
Thank you so much, Erin. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Yeah, you too, Sam. Thanks so much. It's great to meet you.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Special thanks to Jay Deverett and Mihir Radij, my fellow Tech Club execs. And thank you to our career management advisor, Patty Guzzo. And if you enjoyed this episode, feel free to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We'll be back next week with another interview.